everybody. Welcome to the Squanch, Wisecrack's Rick and Morty podcast. My name is Jared, and I'm joined here with the Squanchers. We got Ryan.
Wubba lubba, what the hell is up, everyone? Long time no see.
Long time no see. And joining us again is Dr. Nihilism himself, Michael Burns.
Hey, glad to be back. Hate the nickname.
And joining us for the first time is another fellow YouTuber and podcaster, the renowned Thomas Frank from College Info Geek YouTube channel and the College Info Geek podcast. How's it going, Thomas?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Excited for this.
Yeah, us too. So today we're breaking down Rick and Morty Season 2, Episode 3, Autoerotic Assimilation. As always, let's get some first impressions. Let's start with Ryan. Ryan, what do you think about this episode?
I think this is one of the smartest episodes of Rick and Morty. And it has one of the best endings that still gets me. Like, yeah, it kind of comes out of nowhere, but when it does, it's like, wow. You feel something, I feel. But then, that's pretty, I mean, A plus on this episode. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I agree once again, the ending is a gut punch that sticks around even after you've seen it a while. But like, it just reminded me of the first time I saw this episode when I realized the show was capable of more than I thought in terms of like emotional depth and complexity. And I think that it really like, sort of opens up a pathway that keeps the show interesting.
Absolutely. Thomas, what about you, man?
Yeah, the ending of this episode is depressing.
Yeah.
And it does stick with you. My overall impressions of this episode, I think, are a little bit unfairly weighted downward because the previous episode is my absolute favorite one on the show. But it's still very, very good.
The episode with Fart, right?
Yeah. More Than I Run is my favorite episode.
Okay.
It's got the Garblovians in it. It's got Comproculus Michael. Like, what more do you need?
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, I'm in agreeance with most of you guys. I think this is a top shelf AAA Rick and Morty episode. Mm. Super smart. Some really funny moments. Pretty dense. It's really rewarding to revisit. And I think this is one of the ones I've seen the most. But even so, it was still enjoyable to watch again last night. So yeah, I love the hell out of this episode. And I kind of feel like maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like this is maybe the last AAA perfect Rick and Morty episode that we haven't covered yet.
I don't know. I'd have to look at the
that you haven't covered list.
Yeah, because we've done all of season 3, all of season 1, and now we're making our way through season 2, and we're at season 2 episode 3, and like the top ones are Meeseeks and Destroy, the Citadel episode, this one. I really like the one with the devil. And I think we're running low on those amazing ones.
Trying to figure out what else is in season 2. I think you're right. Like the rest of season 2, although my girlfriend's favorite episode is Get Swifty.
Oh, that's in season 2. Okay, never mind. Never mind.
I do really like that one.
That is another AAA one. Okay, so we got some good ones still ahead of us. Okay, awesome. Yeah, Get Swifty is top notch.
How did you guys rate season 3, episode 1?
Oh, also amazing.
Because that one's one of my favorites.
Super impressive. Yeah, love that one. In general, I am very happy with season 3 as a whole.
Me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of complaints with it.
All right, guys, so before we go on to the recap, I want to remind everybody that check out wisecrackplus.com. And the reason why is because today we have two new pilots up for Wisecrack videos that are going to be coming out this week and in about 2 weeks. But anyway, for our patrons, they are already up and we're taking feedback from our patrons and stuff like that. So if you guys want to join the community, if you want to see the new stuff that we're working on and get it early, check out wisecrackplus.com. Anyway, on to the recap. So Rick, Morty, and Summer answer a ship's distress beacon to find it's been taken over by Rick's ex-girlfriend, Unity, a hive mind entity that assimilates people under a single consciousness. Rick and Co. accompany Unity to her completely peaceful hive mind planet. Unity tells Rick that she has grown out of her immature party years, but it only takes a little time with Rick before she's back to depravity and debauchery. Meanwhile, Morty enjoys the luxury of thousands of people working in coordination to pamper them, while Summer laments their lack of individuality. Jerry's complaining about Rick freeloading at their house when he and Beth stumble upon an alien prisoner being held in a secret hatch under the garage, bringing their disagreements over Rick to a boiling point. The constant partying and drug use take a toll on Unity, and some of the citizens begin to disassimilate from the hive, turning them back to their former selves, i.e. pedophiles, racists, and drug addicts. Soon, a nipple-driven race war erupts. Morty and Summer try to convince Rick to return home for the good of the planet, but Rick dismisses them and continues partying with Unity. Back at the Smith house, the alien rips itself out of its bindings and freaks out because he's sick and tired of hearing about Beth and Jerry's constant bickering. He escapes the garage, still in a huff. The fun can't last forever, and Unity breaks up with Rick. Rick returns home, and Beth musters up the courage to tell Rick that he can't have secret lairs anymore without consulting the family. Rick retires to the garage, where he gets drunk and narrowly evades a suicide attempt. End of episode. So, yeah, this one's pretty rough. I guess, should we talk about, I guess since we're all so affected by the suicide attempt scene, why don't we just talk about that? To start off, get the depressing stuff out of the way, you know? Yeah, get that stuff out of the way. So why do you guys think this affected you so much?
To me, it's just like the very idea that Rick literally is like a god, has everything he wants and could want and can do anything and is still someone who could, you know, want to kill himself is depressing to me, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, yeah. but in a profound way, not in, it wasn't a cheap shot, you know, like it's like, what does that say about him? What does that say about us? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
He's like Saitama from One Punch Man, but way, way further. Bored with his omnipotence or his godlike powers. But Rick is like, I want to die because of it almost. And for some reason, I don't know why, but the fact that he kills the little blob thing first and he's like all sad while he does it makes it just so much more depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think he does that?
I'm not exactly sure why.
He killed it because he's obeying Beth. Remember? Beth's like, no more little slave monsters in your experimenting. He's like, okay, fine.
Oh,
and
he goes,
and then he kills his little pet guy. And then that's cool because filmically we get to see what the laser does and then turns it on himself. Wow.
I think too, like something that struck me about that suicide attempt is like it comes right after this period where he's like back in his glory days with Unity and he wants to keep partying. Like he's the guy that wants to keep it going. And it's like she's moved on and sort of that life has moved on. And it makes me think of that. And like you see that in people sometimes. I think I'm around the age where a lot of people go through that where like you look back and it's like things will never be like that again. Is life moving forward just this boring mess?
And more specifically, like she says that he's the type of guy that has a personality that rubs off on other people, you know, which you can see in every character, literally in the show. And I know people like that too, you know, where it's like, like when they come in, like the world revolves around them for better or worse. And people want, you know, either because people want their affection or whatever. Yeah. And then, and just the fact that, you know, he's a happy guy, it seems like, generally, especially when he was with you. And why do you want to kill himself?
Well, it's like that guy that when he's 25, everyone wants to be around him. You want to have him over for the weekend. And he's 35 living the same way.
Right.
It's like, is he coming over again? No.
It's kind of like the main character in The World's End.
Yeah.
Like, he never changes. Like, with Rick, he realizes that he has, like, these godlike powers and he's so smart. But I think where he gets depressed is where he realizes, like, other people don't automatically like him all the time, even though he could do all those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, the thing I was reflecting on this time when I watched it is how he, in the end, realizes that he is toxic to people he's close to in two folds. One, to Unity, because she basically just straight up tells him that I lose who I am and become part of you and it's not good for me. But then similarly, as soon as he gets home from being rejected by Unity, Beth comes up to him and basically, like, you can see has to like muster up the courage to stand up to him and tell him that, you know, all right, you can't just do these things. I'm standing up to you because you're ruining my marriage and you're compromising the family and stuff like that. So it's basically just raining shit on Rick when he gets home because, you know, it's especially two females that he loves, he realizes that he's got a negative effect on them. And so, I don't know, in a very sick, macabre way, I wonder if that suicide attempt is almost half an expression of love, kind of like, you know, maybe my daughter's better off without me, or maybe Unity's better off without me.
No, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Are we done being depressed?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's talk about freedom because this is
love freedom.
Yeah. Even after this episode?
Oh no. I just meant in general. The concept.
Okay. So, the big thing, and we've talked about this in a couple of our videos, but kind of the focal or the central illusion is going on here is to the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, kind of similar to Unity, people are being replaced with exact replicas of each other, and an alien presence attempts to wipe individuality from the face of the planet in order to simplify things and make life more peaceful. Now, the interesting thing here is that this is largely interpreted at the time as to be a criticism of McCarthyism or a criticism, ironically, of kind of communism in Russia and stuff like that. So it's interesting how you can say that one, as a reaction to communism, of a conformity of opinion under the terror of McCarthy, and on the other hand, the obviously like legal conformity under Soviet era communism. So the great thing about this episode is it takes that premise of Invasion of the Body Snatchers and completely inverts it. And instead of the paranoia of, oh my God, like what would a world where everyone is the same be like? That sounds like a dystopia. It kind of inverts it and shows us that actually, or perhaps a world in which their individuality runs amok, you know, leads to things like race wars and stuff like
pedophilia
and stuff like that. And even when he lands on Unity's planet, we see these shots of like everyone just watering their lawns and everybody getting along. And it's just this peaceful seeming paradise until Rick gets there. So I'm just going to read a quote and then we can kind of talk about our reflections on this. So one of Unity's people says, Summer, before I took over this planet, this man was a registered sex offender. And then Summer says, yeah, well, so what? At least he was himself. And then another person says, this one was a drug addict on the verge of suicide. Now she's a marine biologist. I have transformed life here into a paradise. Prostitutes are now scientists. The homeless are now philosophers. So,
Philosophers.
Yes, yes. Right. And then Morty has a great quote. He says, listen, Unity, I don't think my sister's trying to say that life would be perfect without you. I think she's just saying that life would be, you know, life. I think that Thomas brought up a great point about Saitama, because One Punch Man is very much about the struggles of a life without conflict. And in a sense, when everyone is kind of united under a single disposition and a single personality, there isn't that conflict. And without that conflict, where's life, man?
Yeah.
I was thinking it's kind of like the
central debate here is where, from what perspective do you judge the value of life? Because if you look at it, say an ant colony, right? None of those individual drones really has a whole lot of individuality or freedom of expression. But as a whole, that colony achieves great things, at least from an outward view, right? So where is the value in life? Is the value defined by what you see the actual colony as a whole do, or is it the value of life defined by the individual experience of an ant?
Good question. But I mean, the idea of the fact that they don't have the freedom to choose, they don't have, they're not consenting in this situation, like the people under Unity's spell. I mean, I think that's where the value of life is the fact that people, the people being aware, free thinking, free willing individuals being aware of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of where the perspective comes from. But yeah, well, I mean, you bring up a good point. Yeah.
Not to get too nerdy with it, but this really reminds me of a lot of debates in like 18th and 19th century German philosophy, like stuff around, you know, from Kant to Hegel, and the relationship between freedom and reason. So like if reason is a consistent structure, do you necessarily have to be free to follow the patterns and structures of reason, or is freedom preferable to reason, even if it's, to be crass, like wrong? And you kind of like, there's the bad readings you might get in a, you know, freshman seminar on Hegel, where the whole point for Hegel is, you know, the unity of world spirit combines all subjectivity with objectivity in a consistent rational structure, which is a bad reading of Hegel. But I think that's like a version of what's going on with Unity. Like, is it better if everyone is following the same principles of reason?
It's also kind of like a metaphor for America, you know, like we accept like, you know, we want all these freedoms, but we, you know, you got to accept that a bunch of bad shit happens. That's like the gun debate's the perfect example, you know, it's like, yeah, everyone should be free to have giant weapons, but then, you know, that comes with our weekly or bi-monthly shootings, you know? I mean, it's kind of like, is that preferable? Is our freedom, you know, how much freedom do we want?
Well, it is that whole debate between, like, yeah, is freedom in general worth sacrificing rational, moral, or political principles that you hold to be true? Like, where is that line?
So what would the better reading of Hegel be in that situation?
I mean, the better reading of Hegel would almost be that, like, Rick serves as this point of, like, organic inconsistency or contradiction, which forces reason to adapt. The more, like, large-scale better reading of Hegel is that world spirit literally just means the collective of reason at that point in history. So it's not, like, a magical
Zeitgeist
spiritual force.
Reason.
Yeah. So it's just, like, wherever we're currently at as a culture philosophically and intellectually is the, you know, spirit of the age, like you just said. And then the point for, I mean, there's the point where when Morty talks about, like, life and life kind of being messy, I think that would be the good reading of Hegel, that life itself, like, as a concept, is messy and inconsistent, and we have to acknowledge that, because if we act as if life can be a perfectly unified structure, we're just going to be beating our heads against the wall.
So in that reading, I know that people get angry if you use the word dialectic with Hegel without mentioning Fichte.
Yeah.
But so in that reading, Rick then would be doing a service to Unity because he is kind of the antithesis that allows her to realize something about herself. At the end, she has this epiphany that she says, you can't change. I have no problem with that. But clearly it means that I have a problem with myself. And I'm sure there's no perfect version of me. I'm sure I'll just unify species after species, never be complete. So would you say, in a sense, that Rick is actually ultimately beneficial to Unity in her journey to create, to be a god, as she says?
Yeah, you could say that he's a force of negativity. So he's a force of negativity in her consistent system that forces a modification or progression to that system.
Okay.
And I think, like, in a weird way, like, it's fine to talk about dialectics without mentioning Fichte, by the way. I hereby grant you permission forever.
Thank you, doctor.
But yeah, I think that, like, maybe negativity is a better way to think of his role in that, which then shows the importance of negativity in general. If it's not for the negation of a system or the negation of a form of reason or just a form of subjectivity, there's nothing like pushing you to keep progressing. So at the end of it, Unity is at a higher level. She has a bigger level of self-understanding moving forward.
So if we were to believe that it was strictly Hegelian, would it be that when Rick and Morty descend onto the planet that we see that the planet has issues and needs that negativity in order to adapt? Or is it not necessarily that? Does the negativity kind of find itself into a society that isn't necessarily showing clear problems, but it still is able to evolve and adapt?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the where the Hegel analogy probably breaks down is that in a Hegelian system, negativity happens internal to structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, like, Rick and Morty and Summer are kind of this external thing that pops into that world. I guess you could then, to get way too meta and nerdy about it, say that, like, if the multiverse itself is a system, that it's still internal to that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Okay.
Too much Hegel before noon. Sorry for bringing it up.
No, it's okay, man.
Sorry, Thomas.
That's cool.
I don't even know who Hegel is. So
don't. Never look it up.
Have more philosophy expertise than I do. I kind of saw Rick's entrance as, like, a commentary on a single point of failure, because since everyone has lost their individuality, they're kind of at the mercy of Unity's control over the system, and Rick just, like, basically turns off that control, and then a bunch of bad things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, okay, so then there's the awesome line that Summer says to kind of put a pin on this whole thing, as she says, I didn't know freedom meant people doing stuff that sucks.
Yeah, that's the best line of the whole episode.
Yeah, yeah. I laughed out loud by myself at that line again, because it's so, like, pure. That's such, like, a pure thing that, like, we all think freedom is great, but now it means a race war is broken out because of nipple design.
Yeah.
Because of freedom.
Yeah.
Because of freedom. Well, I mean, it's extreme. It's a very misanthropic view. It's just that, as soon as someone becomes an individual, they automatically become racist. And the first thing that he says when he regains consciousness is, I'm an electrical engineer, father of two, and as you can see from my flat concentric nipple rings. I'm a member of this planet's top race.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. Like, race comes up a couple times too, because the second line of the episode is Rick calling cops racist.
When they first get hilarious. They're profiling the aliens.
Yeah, it's so like literal.
Well, you know what I found out after watching it a second time? So he says that, you know, oh, I'm going to spray paint this thing so it looks like the core blocks did it. A core block is what the guy in the basement is. He's blim blam the core block.
Oh. I didn't catch that.
Shit.
Yeah.
Cool detail.
Yeah. And so, you know, now this might be going way too deep, but. So Blim Blam says later in the episode that he's on that planet to eat babies. And so initially when I first read that, I'm like, oh, okay, so core blocks eat babies. But that's generalizing. That may be a racist inclination for me to think that because
I can't even believe maybe, you said that out loud.
Maybe not all core blocks eat babies. Maybe just Blim Blam is a particularly bad core block.
Everyone and starts that core blocks a bad not name. All core blocks.
Yeah, hashtag not all core blocks.
babies.
not they don't all eat babies and try to spread space AIDS.
as you call it.
So yeah, let's talk about the B plot with Beth and Jerry and Blim Blam. Mm. What'd you guys think about this?
Hilarious. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny.
So do you guys, so Jerry's argument is that Rick walks all over her because of her abandonment issues. Do you guys buy this? Do you think that Jerry is like right in this episode? Do you think that?
Yeah.
Because Beth seems to be always defending Rick to ridiculous extents.
That's like the one area that Jerry always tends to be right. Is when he points out the issues that Beth has because of Rick.
Yeah, he always articulates them pretty well.
Like, I think the show kind of directs away from that a little bit because it makes so clear that Jerry is like a weak man who has a lot of flaws, but I think he is right about that. Like, Beth does let Rick walk all over the family.
Yeah, and I think in this season too, it really continues to build that Beth is both damaged by Rick and secretly way more like Rick than she'd ever want to acknowledge.
Well, and to what extent are we to believe that what Blim Blam says to them is an authentic and correct intervention? Because he says, you both hate yourselves and each other. The idea that it has anything to do with Rick is laughable. But I think to what you guys just said, I think that we are meant to believe that it has something to do with Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah, or at least he's something that exacerbates the issue.
Well, yeah, I think what Blim Blam is just saying is that it begins and ends with them, and Rick is just like, yeah, Rick's in the picture, but even if Rick wasn't, you know, they still have issues.
And well, yeah, it's like any of us could blame stuff on our parents, let's say, but that's a way of avoiding our own issues or maybe avoiding, like, progressing as people. So by focusing on Rick, it's a way to avoid talking about their marriage, their disappointment in themselves.
Yeah, that's all Blim Blam means.
Yeah, there are some times during their argument where she says, nothing is ever good enough for you, Jerry, and Jerry says, you know, you're a child or something like that. So,
And it's kind of cool because, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of the first time that this through line starts, where kind of the show kind of becomes, I feel like, about, you know, the relationships in the family more, or at least like Beth's and Rick's relationship, especially in the third season. So I feel like this is kind of the seed.
You mean
of
Beth and Jerry?
No, I mean, Beth, Jerry, and Rick. Yeah, but just how Rick factors into the whole equation of the family.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, it's been seeded a couple times. Let's see, in even as early as the Shemalians episode, there is,
was a whole plot, a subplot devoted to it, though?
Yeah, because like Jerry's in the simulation during that.
Yeah.
There's like the Beth that basically doesn't move and only says one word, and it's like the best time he's ever had with Beth, which is really sad.
All right, who here is a Star Trek fan?
I wish I was more of one. I like it.
Burns, you're not a Star Trek fan?
I'm in that boat.
I'm not.
All right. I'm not either, really, but I do. Okay. I was able to recognize that there are a number of Star Trek jokes here. So let's talk about Beta 7, the hive mind.
Definitely a Borg joke. Yeah.
Definitely a Borg joke. Tell us a little bit about the Borg, Thomas.
So my understanding of the Borg, having only seen those episodes when I was a kid, is that the Borg, I guess, so like the whole idea of Unity and of Beta 7 especially is a reference to the Borg, which is a hive mind that has a queen. So I guess with the Borg, the hive mind has a physical embodiment. It didn't seem like Unity had one, or at least it wasn't shown. And the Borg assimilate people. And I guess their goal is to assimilate all life forms, except for, correct me if I'm wrong, the Klingons, which the Borg think are unworthy of being assimilated, but everyone else should be assimilated into their race. Mm. And I guess they, I don't know what they do, but they eventually put a bunch of technological crap into your face, kill your individuality, and turn you into a drone for the Hive.
You know what? Actually, in our Ghost in the Shell episode that we made about a year ago, we talked about the Borg in relation to Hegel. Isn't it that the Borg assimilates other people into their culture in order to evolve?
I think so. But again, I don't have a whole lot of Star Trek expertise. So.
Okay. Yeah. It's a shame that I'm Alec sure isn't here because Alec is the resident Star Trek nerd at Wisecrack, but he is visiting his brother at the moment. But so, Thomas, from what you remember, is the Borg, like, I mean, when you compare them to Beta 7, like, Beta 7 is much more schlubby than the Borg. The Borg are like badasses, right?
I don't know. Well, the Borg, the drones kind of look, I don't know. They don't look badass. They look kind of weird, but they're definitely stronger. I don't know. Like, Beta 7 is clearly, it's, Beta 7 is like a cross between a Borg reference and a joke about the guy who's always friend-zoned that the girl always runs back to when the guy she actually likes is an asshole.
Is a joke that he's like a, quote, beta male?
He's a beta male. And you guys saw the end of credits bit of this episode, right? Where he's like outside of Beta 7's giant fortress trying to get Unity back. And he's just like being the friend-zoned protector.
Yes, the friend-zoned protector.
And so, the Borg's definitely like not that, but I wouldn't call them like super badass. They're just more scary.
I just love that Beta 7 has like this sad gut, you know?
Like, it's Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
It looks just like him.
Oh, really? Okay, that's funny. Cool. Well, I want to move on to just some of the funniest parts of this episode because I think there's a lot. Do you guys have any favorites you want to shout out real quick?
We already talked about mine was the, man, freedom. I didn't know that.
I mean, that's one of the best lines of the whole show.
Yeah. I really liked when Morty turns to Summer and says, "Oh, Summer, first race war, huh?"
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see some of the previous race wars that he's been in,
And then, of course,
I'm going to quote you on that, Jerry.
Yeah, and I don't want to steal anyone's thunder if this is on there, but when Rick says, like, not looking for judgment, just a yes or no, can you assimilate a draft?
Well, the fun, I don't know. It took me until like the third time I watched it to realize this. But so after he says that, it cuts back to a Beth and Jerry scene. But then when it cuts back, you see the giraffe and he looks like he's been horribly
damaged.
He looks like he's been violated.
He's through hell. He looks post-traumatic giraffe.
Yeah. that I did not notice that for a while.
Oh, another amazing moment that like was funny and also I think a good character moment for Rick is when he believes that the town next over was a nuclear bombed by Unity and everyone's cheering and he's just like, what? You know, like that actually affects him. That's one of the few things that, you know, like, oh wow, a whole town got nuked and that was just a joke.
And then there's the moment where they're like stadium banging, I think, and there's all the redheads, but then the crowd is like, "You can do it, son," or like something like that.
Because they're all his father.
No, it's all his dad.
That was wild.
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure you can see a couple frames of his dong when he's flying. Because
they wouldn't allow that.
I mean, it's very amorphous. I mean, it's not a very well-defined
when
dong.
When he looks like Uncle Sam or whatever.
Yeah, because
he's
he says, because when he specifies what costume he wants, he says a crotchless Uncle Sam outfit.
And from the previous episode, you know, they like try to get as close as they can to the line because when Jerry's wandering through the alien town, there's that weird either single alien that looks like two aliens having sex or possibly two aliens actually having sex. I don't know, but it's like just weird enough for them to allow to be on TV.
We've talked about how much like there are just phallic and yonic images all over this show. I mean, even the alien that's stuck in the basement has, I mean, there are so many, they has little testicle chin. I mean, but like, it seems like most aliens in this show have testicle chins or testicle heads or something. Right. It's just testicles everywhere.
Speaking of that imagery, did you guys notice any of that in Man of Steel if you watched it?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. I haven't seen it since theaters.
Man, the Kryptonian ships, like every door is just, oh. And then like the thing they launch Zod up into the negative zone with, it looks like a giant phallus.
You know,
I don't know what they were
doing.
We don't do
enough Zack Snyder stuff on the podcast because whether or not you like his movies, he definitely like tries, you know. We almost did Batman v Superman for Show Me the Meaning, our movie podcast this week, but we delayed it. We're going to do it soon, though. And Ryan can't wait because he loves that movie.
Bottom 10 for me.
Like a low effort director. I just think like he puts way too much stock into moments rather than a cohesive story.
See, I think that he puts a lot of stock into moments in his first couple movies and it paid off, you know, like those 300 and
yes, it did.
And whatever. Like, and then I think he just kind of tries to replicate that every time out and, you know, hasn't really hit.
With Watchmen and with 300, he was adapting a single story pretty closely.
Yeah, he needs to do that especially more. With Watchmen. And Dawn of the Dead, though.
Hey, I love, you know, I'm a Watchmen apologist. I think that movie's awesome.
Me too.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so who here is a Community fan?
That was a funny reference.
Yeah, three seasons.
Did you guys medium level Community fan?
Did you guys notice the Community joke? It goes by very quickly. So
he cancels it.
Yeah. So he's looking at the TV. He's sitting next to Unity.
Oh, cancel it. Bring it back.
Cancel, bring it back. And then he says, they just put you, he says, like, don't waste your brain on those weirdos. You know, he's talking about Morty and Summer. They're no different from any of the aimless chumps that you occupy. They just put you at the center of their lives because you're powerful. And then because they put you there, they want you to be less powerful. Never let that happen, right? And then it says never. And like, you see, like, it's like maybe like half a second you see on the screen, there's basically an alien version of the cast of Community looks at the screen and says never. And so I guess by saying, and because they put you there, they want you to be less powerful, is I guess Dan Harmon throwing shade at the execs that like fired him and then rehired him.
Wow, that sounds analogous to what happened.
Man, you know, one thing I wish we saw more of, Jerry's awkward urban lingo. That's like, it's a joke at the beginning. And then as soon as he says, now you're going to keep hating this play, are you going to jack my stees? And then she's like, now you're just making stuff up. But then it just dies. Like, he doesn't do it anymore. And I was like, oh man, why didn't they continue with that?
Yeah, Cool Dad Jerry.
I feel
so
like if
fun.
They had continued, it would have gotten old. I think that's like one of those jokes where it's just random. And if it sticks around for a while, it's funny.
Yeah, they certainly didn't. They shouldn't have overdone it.
They probably
sure.
cut one or two and we just didn't see it.
I just would have liked maybe it came up like at the end again or maybe like, I don't know. Maybe the alien has the same lingo and Jerry's able to communicate with him through like semi-ironic urban lingo.
I feel like they have to use that one sparingly though. Cause like the cultural trope of like lame white guy that uses urban lingo wears thin real quick. So maybe it's something they want to leave us wanting more rather than
that's
overdoing
right. I want more. So I guess they did something good.
I agree. But just Jerry doing it though, to me, transcends it because he is the ultimate lame white guy. You know?
Of course.
So it's like he would has to do it.
Yeah.
It would be weird for him not to.
And I think it plays better in an animated setting, I think, as well, than like a human lame white guy doing that stuff.
Yeah. Definitely. Like, if you watch Steve Martin bringing down the house with Queen Latifah now, it is so cringeworthy.
Wait, that didn't age really well?
No. No.
How many times have you seen bringing down the house with Queen Latifah and Steve Martin?
More than I'd like to admit.
Why? How has it happened?
Because we had it on DVD in my house, and, you know, it was just
so it's a family favorite.
No, it just is it's just around the family. We have a big DVD collection.
Oh, my God, I just remembered parts of that. Doesn't Steve Martin wear like a do-rag at one point?
Yeah, he goes in and he just like walks into the club and is trying to dance.
Boy.
You know, like, it's stupid.
But it's not just that movie. There's like a whole, there was like,
that's
a,
like
decade,
a, sub-genre.
A decade
it was called
of movies
the 90s
like that.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's called a trend.
Yeah.
So on the subject of Jerry being kind of like the weak man or the beta man or like the ultimate like suburban white guy, I just started watching Archer last night and realized that Cyril's voice actor is Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it fits so well.
Yeah,
but
he's
I wonder
amazing.
If Dan Harmon picked that voice actor specifically because he was almost trying to like write a Cyril into the show.
Oh. Well, Chris Parnell is just a funny guy too because that's who does it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that him? Okay.
Yeah, fun trivia fact, he grew up a mile away from me in Memphis, Tennessee.
Wow.
There you go.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Never met him.
So that's
though.
Where funny guys with great voices come from.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Thanks, Dr. Nihilist.
No. Oh, you know what? Fuck off. I take it back. Rewind that.
My favorite comments that we've gotten recently is that Ryan has a fat voice. you know what I'm talking about?
I read
people
that one.
People see Ryan and they're like, wow, I'm really surprised he's not fat. He has a very fat voice. So Ryan, your voice needs to lose weight, bro.
Trying to imagine you as just like morbidly obese now. Keep talking.
His eyes are closed, everyone.
All right. Does anyone else want to bring anything up before we move into the mailbag about this episode?
So you guys asked about the funny things.
Yes, go for it.
I just love when the cone nipple guy calls the other guy a ripple nipple bastard.
Oh, like he said, yeah, yeah. We see like the racial epithets. He called one of them, the guy with the target nipples, called the guys like a knife nipple jackass or something like that.
I was just going to say, this isn't really funny, but the way Rick says dumb when Summer's like, can you do it for me? He's just like, dumb. I'd love that.
Oh yeah. And just like he's in like a sombrero with like with like bullets.
Like a mustache.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I do like the moment at the very end, I guess, where we learn that he just wants to cure space AIDS to market it and make money. A little pharmaceutical exploitation reference there.
It's very balanced how Blim Blam tells them that, yes, you're both right. Yes, he wants to cure space AIDS, but it's not for benevolent reasons. It's because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
One thing about Blim Blam, I loved the Blim Blam scene, but my suspension of disbelief was a little stretched whenever he said, I could have, it took you guys to make me escape, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you're being held captive in this basement. It's like, and you could escape and you didn't. I don't believe you, Blim Blam.
Yeah. Are we to believe that when he leaves the garage, he's like, fuck this planet. Is he going to eat babies?
I think he's getting off the planet.
Or he just leaves.
He just leaves.
He leaves the planet.
Yeah, I feel like he is out.
Because he's just like, fuck these two people. Humanity isn't even worth destroying.
I don't even want to eat their babies.
Yeah. He's very disappointed with the speed of a suburban garage door as well. That really seemed to be
The slowest door ever line was just kind of like thrown in there and maybe could have been reworked into a little better joke. I don't know.
Yeah, because he had just said the worst about them. And then he said, slowest door ever. Which isn't is that kind of like the same joke.
The middle finger helped, though, for me. Like, slowest door ever, and then, the middle finger. For whatever reason, that did it for me.
That whole, like, blank thing ever, like, even that intonation, is that just a comic book guy from The Simpsons joke?
That's just something that came into parlance. I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
To me, that makes me think more of, like, I do. I always think of, like the Clueless world when I think of that, of something worst something ever.
Okay.
I think of Equals 3 videos from back in the day where like they'd be like cutest furry little bastard ever.
If someone out there could tell us where blank blank ever originated, that would help us out.
Best week ever, VH1. Done.
Well, more than just the blank blank ever, it's that the way he says it, because isn't the comic book guy just like, ugh, worst convention ever or something like that?
That was a good...
Thank you. That was nice. Thank you. I'm good at like getting my fat voice out.
I was going to say you sounded like husky, not fat. Like bigger, but when I look at you, I'd be like, oh, but he should be that big.
Okay.
Like,
Whereas Ryan's voice is just always morbidly obese.
Yeah. 200 pounds over.
I hear Ryan's voice and I just buy a bunch of insulin and send it to Wisecrack for Ryan just in case.
That was you? Oh my God.
Oops. Secret angel.
All right, guys, let's go into the mailbag. So this one is from Mads. Mads says, hey, Squanchers, there seems to be some confusion among you. Or rather, Ryan was confused. Alec and Jared just didn't give a shit as to why the
many emails about Goodbye Moon Men.
As to why the line Goodbye Moon Men was repeated several times when Fart sings to Morty. So this is actually about your favorite episode, Thomas.
I was wondering why you guys were confused about this. I was listening to your episode.
However, I believe the answer is evident if you look at the rest of the lyrics. The worlds can be one together, cosmos without hatred. All the Moon Men want things their way, but we want their way, but we make sure they see the sun. Goodbye, Moon Men. The way I see it is Fart is saying there could be peace and unity throughout the universe, but the carbon-based inhabitants of it, i.e. aliens or Moon Men, are keeping this from happening. To fix this, Fart is planning to cleanse all carbon-based life forms and is saying goodbye because, well, everyone's going to die. So is that how you read it as well, Thomas?
Yeah, exactly. Like, see the sun, just like, you're going to be burned away, basically.
Yeah, I honestly, after re-listening to the episode, I myself was like, why am I so confused about that? I agree with everyone out there. Sorry.
Though the imagery is so weird.
vaped a little too much that day.
Nice.
All right, this next one is from, and I'm going to mess this up, Newt, K-N-U-T-E.
K-N-U-T-E. Nudie.
Nudie.
Yeah.
All right. So this is last week we briefly were talking about how growing up today, like in middle school in the age of Instagram and social media, actually Bo Burnham just made a movie about this. Yeah. Did you see it yet?
I haven't. I'm excited to see
it. I'm excited to see it too. But we were talking about how, I mean, I would not want to be in their place. It seems pretty harrowing. But so this is from, what was it again?
Newt. It's Newt. Like Newt Rockman.
Was there an I at the end?
No.
Oh, never mind. I was wrong.
Okay.
You were right.
So he says, I'm 14 and would like to say I love your podcast and videos. At the beginning of your podcast of season 2, episode 2, I couldn't stop thinking about what you said about the difficulties of being young today. I would just like to give my opinion to tell you that growing up today also has many benefits, such as equality rights and growing up in an atmosphere where it's easier to feel more accepted than ever. I do live in a white suburbia, but I still believe that things are better than they were. I know this has nothing to do with the episode, but I hope it helps. Well, I'm glad to have gotten this email because I'm always super paranoid and always a technophobe, and I'm always just like, oh, social media is making everyone worse and more anxious and more depressed. But it's good to hear this other.
Yeah.
Can I make a couple of arguments for why it's good?
Yeah.
So my best friend and I often talk about this. So I graduated in 2009 from high school, for context. And obviously, this is not going to be universal, but we often make the observation that it just seems like now it's so much less cool to be a bully. Hot Topic isn't about being like depressed and cutting yourself. It's about just like memes and shows. Like a lot of things have changed to where it's like not as okay to be a crappy person. Uh-huh. And clearly not universal, but at least when I was in school, it seemed like it was a lot cooler, quote unquote, to be a bully or to be an asshole. Yeah.
You know what I think the best embodiment of this is?
21
Jump Street. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Especially, just thinking that.
Especially because Josh Hartnett's character comes in basically embodying
Channing Tatum.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Josh Hartnett.
Whatever, they look the exact same.
Whoa.
Do they not?
I just think Channing Tatum's so much better.
Probably.
Yeah, he's like, you just got to beat the shit out of somebody on your first day of school and everyone will respect you. Right? And then he punches someone else.
Those were the social rules when I was in high school. And then like he beats...
Dave Franco's like, what the fuck, dude?
What the fuck, man? Yeah. And then he like calls him gay and he's like, whoa, that's not cool. Like he actually is gay. You know, it's like, cooler to be sensitive.
Can I be the downer on this one?
Yeah.
Please.
I'm sorry for... What was the guy's name who asked this question?
Newt.
I don't know.
Newt. Okay, man. I don't want to be a jerk to you, but the one thing though I'll say is when I was growing up, like there weren't literal Nazis in the country, and
yeah, there were.
There were literal Nazis, but like brothers. The way in which like that stuff, it's weird. Like it's like less. There's certain words we can't use, and identity stuff is way better. I totally agree. But we also live in a world where like there's like colleges now where like people show up with their assault rifles and walk around to like prove their rights. We have like alt-right groups and like stuff like that are way more visible than they ever were before.
I don't know, man. I think that if you'd go back in time, there's been shit like that throughout.
You're just saying that the internet makes it more visible and allows it to.
I definitely agree with that we all are more aware of the shitty part of our society, and that's kind of a weird thing.
But I feel like it's easier to be accepted all around. So like stuff like gender, race, way more easy to be accepted. But if you're also just like real far out there, that you can also find spaces like of acceptance.
Right. That's the problem.
Terrorists. Yeah.
And I've even seen
where
this like
people can be validated no matter how bad their views are because people only need a few other people to validate them. And then they will be defensive against the people who come against them rather than just slinking back.
But whatever. Newt's a good guy. And I know he's out there fighting for good stuff. Right, Newt?
Well, and Jared, you talked about the Bo Burnham, right? The, you know, kind of have the eighth grade movie coming out that is about this. And he was on the other day on the H3 podcast, and he kind of touched on this, on how and I found it to be true too, that like younger kids don't, like they're actually way more self-aware about this stuff than I feel like we realize. And it's really like 30-year-olds that are the most fucked up about social media and stuff. Cause we're, we didn't grow up with it. And it's kind of like this, you know, like our perspective is we were saying, oh man, these kids must be fucked up because they're growing up with this stuff. When in reality they're aware of that. And
they're aware of what though?
They're like, aware when I, that, 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 that they're, they obviously didn't live, grow up without it, but they're aware that this stuff is screwing with their perception. I do feel like that.
And we grew up with like even like cable TV and the early internet. And I think like, you know, you go back every generation, there's always a cultural paradigm that the generation before is like, how are they going to turn out okay?
You know, the way I think about this, and I think the thing that I was mostly talking about here is like, you guys remember, did you ever have during like Valentine's Day, they had like certain kids would get like carnations. Did you guys have that? So it was like
we had little Valentine's Day cards that were passed out. I don't know about carnations.
Okay, so in my school, it was that basically like on Valentine's Day, like the week leading up to Valentine's Day, basically like secret admirers or whatever would buy like these chocolate carnations for a dollar, and then at Valentine's Day, like the teacher would basically like announce who got the carnations, and of course, all the popular people would get a shit ton of carnations, and the not popular people would get none. Yeah. So I think, and of course, like for people that were not popular, including myself, that was just a humiliating day every single time. I feel like with Instagram and stuff like that, that phenomenon is every day because you're because like your popularity or how desirable you are is quantified with likes and shares and hashtags and all that shit every day.
Yeah. No, so I think you're right. Like in a certain way, back in the day, our bullies were like analog. So like, I don't know, when I got shit for stuff in school. And then so you'd go to school, you get shit, and you go home and you're away from it. I couldn't have imagined being like in eighth grade getting shit at school, going home and checking my social media and having those same people, but maybe even around the world, also giving me shit.
Yeah. Or just like, you know, like, oh man, you can't come to my party unless you have over 500 Instagram followers. Like, imagine.
I doubt that that actually happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Gary, you imagine that. Like, but I go to Calabasas. Some party is like that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because like you were saying earlier.
I did see recently a story about a mural on the side of a building and some company had blocked it off and you can only take a selfie in front of it if you have 10,000 followers or more.
Dude, even at VidCon, at VidCon, like you would get messages that like, oh, come to this exclusive party only if you have over 1 million subs. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's hilarious.
Did you go to that party, Thomas?
No.
Why not, Thomas? Kidding.
I don't want to go to a party where that's like, front and center, like it's so exclusive. You can only come if you have 1 million subs. Like, I don't want to be.
I don't.
Well, it's like,
and if there are cool people there, I don't want to be in that environment. I would rather like meet a cool person, just like, I don't know, at a hangout room or something. I don't know.
Well, for anyone who sees Sorry to Bother You, there's a fun scene about how VIP rooms suck.
So, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hear you. I also think that probably Thomas, you and I would probably not even get recognized in that party. I don't think that the people who are into that party are probably into our content, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, not really. I got recognized like twice at VidCon this year.
Yeah.
The funny thing is I got recognized far less this year than last year, even though last year my channel was half the size.
It might just be the people that go to VidCon who are all wonderful people.
I don't know, but
if you're listening.
Did it feel like VidCon was more sparsely populated this year?
I actually didn't go this year. I went last year though.
Oh, you didn't go this year.
Ryan was there. What'd you think?
Well, I hadn't been there the years before. Felt pretty packed to me.
I mean, it might maybe also been, maybe there wasn't as much security because like last year there was never mind.
Did you go to Tanacon?
No.
What?
All right, moving on to the next one.
Nacho Con this year was crazy. You all missed out.
All right, this is the last one. Hey, yo, Squanchers, greeting from New York City. Hi, Alec. Alec is not here. I just wanted to share with you a little detail in Morty Night Run that I haven't heard from anyone else. When Morty is playing Roy, he becomes completely immersed in the game and presumably loses all of his memories of his reality and spending a lifetime in it. When Rick is playing Roy, however, he's able to hold a conversation with Morty. So while Rick is living an alternate life, not to mention experiencing it at a vastly accelerated rate, he is still able to maintain his awareness of reality. Whether this was intentional or a nod to Rick's unmatched intelligence, I thought it was a fun little Easter egg. Keep up the bomb-ass work from Nico.
That's interesting. Hadn't thought about it. Well, he obviously has played the game a lot, you know, because he's fucking, what did he say, crash his score or wreck his score?
He's like, he takes him off the grid.
He's about to wreck your Roy score.
Yeah.
Yeah, he takes him off the grid. He's about to burn his Social Security card. Whoa.
Yeah, I did notice how Morty's eyes go in the back of his head. And then Rick is just able to talk to him. Yeah, it was kind of weird. I didn't really think they were trying to make a huge statement about it. It was more just like making the exchange funnier.
It's a fun detail, though.
It is a fun detail.
Yeah, it really is.
And more to Thomas's point, there's Crumbopulous Michael, there's the Moon Men song, there's the Roy game. It's a good episode. Solid. It's a solid, a solid favorite, Thomas. I'm sorry we couldn't have you on for your favorite. You just missed it.
That's all right. You guys didn't know. And the Garblovians are just the best. They make the best movies.
Yeah. All right. Well,
have you seen the little, what is it? Five Nights at Freddy's sort of tribute they did on YouTube?
That Rick and Morty did?
Yeah.
I did not. Is that new?
They've done some pretty good little animation shorts. No, they did it as like a teaser or an in-between thing between seasons 2 and 3. So they've got that. And there's also a Meeseeks pixelated art fighting video on the Adult Swim channel. Both of them are great.
Huh. Oh, I'll have to check that out. The last Rick and Morty thing I saw was the April Fool's joke with
the Australian,
yeah. The Bendigo thing.
That was fun.
That was fun.
I need to see that one still.
Pretty weird.
Anyway, so before we go, just want to remind you guys, if you want to check out our two new pilots, head over to wisecrackplus.com. Included in those pilots, we also, Michael is, he's just started a music podcast. We're still ironing out the kinks and everything, but that should be launching soon.
Please listen to it when it comes out. Thanks.
Yeah, we're going to upload the current cut onto Patreon. So if you guys are interested, you can give us your feedback. We're always looking for feedback from our patrons. So if you want to join, it'd be much appreciated. Before we go, also want to tell you guys, please check out Thomas's podcast, the College Info Geek Podcast. Actually, Thomas, what I did not tell you is one of our interns this semester is a huge fan, and when she thought that you were coming in physically, she kind of geeked out. I had to tell her, unfortunately, you're not going to be making it physically. But she said that you saved her ass in college. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, making a difference. So anyway,
glad I could help.
Check out Thomas's podcast. Check out his YouTube channel. Our collabs together have been some of the most successful ones. I don't know, something about our audience meshes. I don't know what it is.
We're all a bunch of geeks.
We're all a bunch of fucking nerds. All right. Where can we find you guys on the internet, Ryan?
You can find me on Ryan's Game Show and Ryan's Shorts. This week, I had a collaboration with Wisecrack. We put out a HQ parody called WQ.
And it's hilarious. I loved it. I watched it twice and laughed both times.
Good.
Michael.
Oh, you on Instagram, Michael O. Burns. Twitter, Mick_O_Broin. Listen to the Wisecrack music podcast if it comes out. Yay.
Yay.
Cool. And Thomas.
Instagram, Tom Frankly. Same with Twitter. And then collegeinfogeek.com.
Cool.
I'm gonna catch those
All
stories.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Thomas. We got to do it again, especially if there's a movie that you really dig, you should come on the movie podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
And thanks for having me on this show.
Absolutely. Great having you. And that's going to wrap it up for today. So thank you guys and squanch you later.
Wubba wubba dub dub from Hollywood, California.
Put hot sauce on everything.